Welcome to episode 18 of the Fredcast for the week of May the 15th, 2006. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. In this week's episode, I'll bring you up to date on where we're at in 2006 Giro d'Italia, give you information on how Pataki is doing after his knee surgery, information on the Tour of Catalonia, another Pro Tour event going on while the Giro is taking place. It's Bike to Work Week. Wednesday is Livestrong Day. Another product recall. And additional information and lots of news from around the world. Plus, a review of a new cycle computer from a famous German speedometer manufacturer and much more. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes your Fredcast. Well, welcome back. I hope you've had a great week. As we discussed last week, we're right in the middle of the first Grand Tour of the year, the Giro d'Italia. Now, when we last left off, the riders had completed three stages in Belgium and were about to complete the final Belgian stage before moving on to Italy. After three stages, Stefan Schumacher of Gerolsteiner was wearing the leader's pink jersey or the Maglia Rossa, with Discovery's Paolo Salvadelli in second place and Gerolsteiner's David Rebellin in third. Meanwhile, Ivan Basso was in 16th place and Jan Ulrich was well within the peloton at 98th place. So enough catching up, the fourth stage took place last Tuesday. Now, it was a 193-kilometer race from Wands to Hotten. And once again, it was another sprint finish, with Robbie McEwen beating out Paolo Bettini and Alberto Lodo to take his second stage victory in this year's Giro. Now, despite his victory in the stage, Stefan Schumacher finished in the same time as McEwen and remained the overall race leader and got to keep the pink jersey. Now, Wednesday was a rest day while the riders and their entourages traveled from Belgium to Italy to get ready for Thursday's Stage 5. Now, Stage 5 was a 38-kilometer team time trial from Piacenza to Cremona, and that's just southwest of Milan. Now, the stage, the fifth stage, was won by CSC, with T-Mobile coming in second place just 1 second behind the winners, and Discovery ended up taking third. Now, despite coming in second, however, the race lead shifted. Stefan Schumacher lost the pink jersey, and it went over to T-Mobile's Sergei Gonchar with a 6-second overall lead over CSC's Jens Voigt and T-Mobile's Michael Rogers. Now, at the end of Stage 5, the previous leader, Stefan Schumacher, ended up in 8th place in the general classification, 31 seconds behind Gonchar. Now, Stage 6 on Friday was a 227-kilometer event, and this one went from Busseto to Forlì. The stage was relatively flat over its entire length, which really aided the sprinters, and, once again, Australia's Robbie McEwen came out the victor in the final sprint, which he ended up winning over T-Mobile's Olaf Pollock and Lithuania's Tomas Vaitkus. Now, Pollock, of course, got a time bonus, even though he was in second place, and that time bonus ended up helping him take over the overall lead in the general classification going into Saturday's Stage 7. Now, Stage 7 went from Cesena to Saltara, and this one was near the Adriatic coast. Stage 7 is the longest of this year's Giro, and it comes out at a total of 236 kilometers with three climbs and then a short uphill at the very, very end of the stage. Stage 7 featured an exciting finish. My problem when you watch stage racing is you end up watching and this breakaway will end up leaving pretty early in the race, and somewhere around the middle or certainly very, very close to the end, the peloton will end up reeling him in, and the breakaway ends up finishing way in the back of the pack. But this time, it was really exciting because in this case, while the breakaway group of six riders was eventually pulled in, one rider, and that was Belgian Rick Verbrugge of the Cofidis team, he made a late solo break with just 5 kilometers to go, and he ended up taking the stage victory for himself. And this is his 16th career stage victory. His margin of victory this time was 14 seconds over Paolo Salvadelli and the rest of the peloton. Now, at the end of Stage 7, Sergei Gonchar was back in the pink, with Salvadelli in second place thanks to his time bonus for taking second place in the stage. Ivan Basso, ended up breathing down everyone's necks, coming up in third place in the general classifications at the end of that stage. Now remember, Basso, of course, is one of the favorites going into the Giro. So to see him in third place means he's about ready to make his move. So here comes Sunday's eighth stage. Now this stage ended up hugging the Adriatic coast as the riders continued their southward trek along the east coast of Italy from Civitanova Marche to Maialetta. Now, the majority of this stage's 170 kilometers was relatively flat, with some major climbing at the end of the stage. Now, as the climbs commenced, Ivan Basso ended up attacking with just 4 kilometers to the finish. And by the end of the day, Basso was wearing the Maglia Rosa and had opened up a sizable lead, 1 minute and 34 seconds over his nearest competition. And in the end, he ended up punishing some of the race favorites along the way. Couple of examples. Defending champion Paolo Salvadelli ended up losing over 2 minutes, while the former two-time winner Gilberto Simoni lost just over 1 minute. Now, today's ninth stage was a short, flat 127 kilometers and was probably a welcome one for the riders who had just endured 2 long and hilly days, continuing down the Adriatic coast from Francavilla al Mare to Termoli. Now, the flatness of the stage once again favored the sprinters, with the final result actually determined by a photo finish. As a matter of fact, Paolo Bettini, the defending Olympic champion, actually raised his arms in victory at the end of the finish, but in the end, after the photo finish, Bettini was in second place, and the stage victory went to AG2R's Tomas Vaitkus. Third place went to Germany's Olaf Pollock. Now, Ivan Basso finished 27th, but he was in the same time as Vaitkus, so he ends up retaining the Maglia Rosa. Now, tomorrow's 10th stage is 187 kilometers and goes from Termoli to Pesici before a rest day on Wednesday, and then a continuation of the race as they move back up to Tuscany on Thursday. So, at the end of 9 stages, here's how the general classification currently stands. First place, Ivan Basso from Italy. He's at 34 hours, 46 minutes, and 30 seconds. Second place is Jose Gutierrez Cataluna from Spain, and he's 1 minute 34 seconds behind. Third place, Damiano Cuniego of Italy, 1 minute 48 seconds behind. Fourth, Paolo Salvadelli, 2 minutes and 35 seconds behind. And fifth place is Sergei Honchar from the Ukraine, 2 minutes and 43 seconds behind. So that's your general classification at the end of 9 stages of the Giro. You can, if you're in the United States, you can continue to watch the weekly summaries and weekly wrap-ups on the OLN TV network, or of course you can watch daily on cycling.tv as we talked about last week, but I will be bringing you more results from the rest of this week's racing on next week's Fredcast, so look for that then. Okay, so I think you'll remember that last week we talked about a couple of riders, some high-profile riders, who ended up dropping out of the Giro very, very early in the race this year. And one of those was Italian Alessandro Petacchi. Now, Petacchi, in case you don't know, in the last 3 years has won 19 stages of the Giro. But last Monday he was injured when he tangled with a couple of riders in a stage, and he ended up actually shattering his left kneecap, and he had a surgery earlier in the week. They repaired the kneecap with some, I guess it was some synthetic material that they used, but it's going to end up getting actually absorbed by his body, and it will end up repairing the kneecap. And the doctors say everything is looking really good. The only real bummer, I guess, for Petacchi, besides the fact that he's injured and he's not able to continue in this year's Giro, is that he has actually conceded that he will not be fit enough for this year's Tour de France, but he is hoping that he'll be back for the Tour of Spain or the Vuelta a España, which begins at the end of August. So wish Alessandro a lot of luck in his recovery, and hopefully we'll be seeing him at the Tour of Spain coming up in just a couple of months. And while all the racing is going on in Italy, and it seems like everybody's attention is directed there, there actually is another Pro Tour event going on simultaneously. And that is the 7-stage Tour of Catalonia taking place in Spain. And it started today, May the 15th, with a 12.6 kilometer individual time trial in the town of Salou. I know I'm saying that wrong. Forgive me. It's S-A-L-O-U. And today's stage actually was won by Fabian Cancellara of CSC, and he was 3 seconds faster than the Russian Vladimir Karpets and the Slovenian Janez Brakovic. Also in fourth place was South Africa's Robert Hunter. There are a lot of Pro Tour riders in this race and a lot of Pro Tour teams, and it looks like it's going to be a really, really good event. Now, what was interesting was Cancellara said after the race that he's not expecting to hang on to the lead. Again, he's one of these guys who's really focusing on the Tour de France, and he doesn't really want to wear out his team if he makes them help defend his leader's jersey as he goes through this 7-stage race. So he's really happy to have won the stage, according to a lot of the things that I've read, but it doesn't look like he's going to be defending. Now, there are a couple of hilly stages coming up, including a very tough finish in the Pyrenees on Thursday, and it looks like that's going to be the race that's really, that's going to be the stage that's really going to establish who is going to be the man to beat in this race. So there's a lot of big racers in this. Levi Leipheimer is there. Cadel Evans is there. Santiago Botero. So Eric Zabel is there. So there's a lot of big racers there that are not at the Giro. So I'll keep my eye on this one, and I'll update you again next week to let you know how it all came out. So stay tuned. I'll have the final results of the Tour of Catalunya next week for you. On the Fredcast, and I've also put a link in the show notes to the VoltaCatalunya.com website. It is all in Spanish, but there's plenty of information there that I think you'll find interesting if you want to check it out. Okay, in case you didn't know it, here in the United States, May is National Bike Month, and along with being National Bike Month, the League of American Bicyclists is promoting this week as National Bike to Work Week. That's May the 15th through the 19th, and Bike to Work Day is this coming Friday, May the 19th. I've put a link in the show notes to the League's website where you can learn more about it. And one of the things that I found in just going along the web and trying to find more information about Bike to Work Day and Bike to Work Week is that virtually every state in the United States has some really good information on their websites about giving you tips on cycling to work, and some companies also offer incentives. So, you know, I couldn't put every single link to every single company and every single state and all of their websites, but whatever state you're in, whatever municipality you're in, if you're in the United States, you should be able to find some information. It's pretty interesting because I know that, for instance, in a lot of places, San Diego, for instance, I know that there's a lot of corporations that are sponsoring rest stops where as you're on your way to work, there will be maybe a tent set up with some food and some neat souvenirs and some liquids and water to help fuel you as you're cycling to work. So that's a really neat thing. If it's going on in San Diego, I'm sure it's going on in other parts of the country. So you have a couple of days before the actual Bike to Work Day. It's time to go on the web and research where you might be able to find some of these rest stops so that you can take advantage of them. And maybe your company is sponsoring a rest stop, and maybe you could get out there and volunteer since you're already a cyclist and help spread the word to others about the benefits of cycling, and especially the benefits of cycling to and from work. So go on the show notes, find the link to the League of American Bicyclists, and I hope that you all participate in Bike to Work Day this Friday. Now, as part of National Bike Week, the Lance Armstrong Livestrong Foundation has declared that Wednesday, May 17th, is going to be Livestrong Day. And this is a day when the Livestrong Foundation is going to lead a group of advocates from each state to raise awareness on Capitol Hill about the issues faced by the 10 million Americans affected by cancer. Now, they're asking all sorts of volunteers and all sorts of communities all over the country to do all sorts of things to help support people affected with cancer. Now, no matter where you are and whether or not you're in one of these communities where these volunteers are taking part in these events, it really doesn't matter because there are things that the Livestrong Foundation is asking you to do on Wednesday to help raise awareness for those who are living with and surviving with cancer. So the first thing is to wear yellow on Wednesday and encourage your family and friends to do the exact same thing. And of course, if you've got a LiveStrong bracelet, or maybe you've got a LiveStrong t-shirt, or maybe you've got a LiveStrong jersey, or whatever it is, wear that on Wednesday. Just help raise awareness of the LiveStrong Foundation. Second, perhaps there is a LiveStrong Day event or activity near you. They're hoping that you're going to participate in that. And I've put a link in the show notes to the LiveStrong website where you can learn more about this and find out whether or not there is an event near where you live. Third, they're inviting you to send an e-card to your friends and family and neighbors and colleagues, people you work with. And again, you can find a link to that in the show notes. And then fourth, they're maybe saying that you could take part in a virtual LiveStrong Day activity. They have a blog against cancer. There's a link to that in the show notes. And finally, they're asking you to send a message to your members of Congress, encouraging them to make cancer a national priority. So a lot of great stuff going on Wednesday for people who are affected by cancer and to support them. And I don't know about you, but personally, I've been wearing my LiveStrong bracelet for, wow, it must be going on close to 2 years now. And I notice when I go out and do centuries and a lot of cycling events, I see a lot of LiveStrong bracelets out there. So I know a lot of cyclists are involved in this cause. So do what you can on Wednesday to help support the LiveStrong Foundation in what I consider to be a very important effort that they're doing and a lot of good work that they're doing. So that's Wednesday, May 17th, LiveStrong Day. Well, last week I brought you the story about some Trek helmets that were recalled, and this week I've got another recall to tell you about, and I hope that you'll listen up because this one has to do with child safety, and that's something that we should all be concerned with. In this case, the product that's being recalled is the Schwinn Deluxe Bicycle Child Carrier, and about 14,000 of these were sold, and so if you've got a Schwinn Child Carrier, it's time to listen up. It turns out that what they're talking about here is a carrier seat for a child, and it's attached to the back of an adult's bicycle. The carriers in question are gray plastic with a blue rubber back and seat pad with a gray headrest and black straps. The model number is SW571T, and that's printed on the carrier's packaging and in the owner's manual. And the letters PTI are printed on a yellow warning sticker on the back of the carrier seat. These were sold at various department stores, discount department stores, and military exchanges throughout the United States from September 2004 through November 2005. And if you bought one of these, it probably cost you about $50. Now, the problem here is that if the seat isn't fully seated on the rack, there are some plastic guide tabs on the carrier that can end up breaking. And if these tabs break, the seat could end up falling off, and of course, that could mean a risk of serious injury to the child that's seated in the carrier. If you have one of these, or even if you suspect that you have one of these, you should stop using it immediately, and you should return the carrier to the store, and you can contact a company called PTI Sports for a free safety bracket and some revised installation instructions. PTI Sports can be reached at area code 800-515-0074. The number again, 800-515-0074. And they can be reached between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. And I've put a link in the show notes to the Schwinn press release with all of the details that I've just mentioned, as well as to the CPSC or the Consumer Product Safety Commission's website, where you can find all of these details. So if you've got a Schwinn child carrier or you suspect that you may have one like this, stop using it. Go to the link in the show notes, check it out, and get the new bracket and the new installation instructions so you can make sure that your kids are safe. Following up on another story we talked about last week, I mentioned the fact that the National Mountain Bike Championships in the United States were going to have to be moved due to the record snowfall that Mammoth Mountain here in California received this year. A record 664 inches of snow this year and a reported base depth of nearly 20 feet as of May 1st. So as a result of all that snow and the fact that they're going to have a lot of snow left still in July, they ended up having to find another location for the National Mountain Bike Championships. And they have found that location. It's the Infineon Raceway in Sonoma, California. And they're going to be hosting the 2006 USA Cycling Mountain Bike National Championships. And they're moving it up 1 week to the weekend of July the 13th through the 16th, and they're going to be doing this in conjunction with the previously scheduled Infineon Technologies Cougar Mountain Classic. Now, originally, the race in Mammoth was going to be the fifth round of the 2006 National Mountain Bike Series, but that has now been removed from the series, and it's no longer going to factor into the overall series standings. Instead, the event has been designed as the standalone American-only national championship for all levels and disciplines of mountain biking. So I've put a link in the show notes to the Cougar Mountain Classic website where you can learn a little bit of more information about what they're going to be doing there. And I've also put a link in the show notes to a website called sportsbaseonline.com where you will be able to start registering for the National Mountain Bike Championships, and that registration opened today. So if you're interested in registering, go to that website and register as soon as possible. And by now, a complete schedule of events should be available on that website. So go check it out, and hopefully we should see you, or a lot of you, I hope, up in Sonoma, July the 13th through the 16th. Well, I hope you remember, but a few months ago, I told you about an event, and it was one of those ones I told you was on my list of things to do before I die. And of course, I mispronounced it. I called it the Tour d'Afrique. It's the Tour d'Afrique. And if you remember, this was an epic bicycle race, which started in Cairo back in January, and which ended last weekend, last Saturday, in South Africa. Now, this was a 120-day event with 96 cycling days, and it ended on Saturday. The men's race was won by Matthew Coretti of the United States, followed by George Ortel of South Africa, and Urs Luthi of Switzerland. For the women, Joan Lorenz of Cape Town, South Africa, followed by Philippa Leroux of KwaZulu-Natal, South Africa, and third place went to Krista Meyer of Switzerland. I can't imagine the sense of accomplishment these people feel after all 63 of them ended up crossing the finish line on Saturday. I wish them, you know, all my best wishes and congratulations for really doing an amazing, amazing feat. And we'll look forward to this one happening again next year. And hopefully in the years to come, I'll have a chance to do it, or perhaps some of you Fredcast listeners will have a chance to do it. So congratulations to the finishers of the Tour d'Afrique. Well, we learned last week that depending on where you are, you have different hazards when you're out riding your bike. I told you that where I live here in Los Angeles, one of my biggest hazards is motorists and vehicles. Matter of fact, I had a run-in with one this evening on my evening training ride. And then last week I told you about the gentleman in Swaziland who had a run-in with an elephant while he was out riding his bike. Well, here's one that's really scary, and this one took place up in Banff in Canada, and this is in Alberta, Canada, where an undersized black bear chased, caught, and mauled a bicycle rider on a mountain bike in Canada's oldest and most popular national park. If you've ever been to Banff, it's beautiful up there. But this was a really, really tragic situation that happened. The cyclist, his name is Greg Flatten. He's 41, and he's a web administrator, actually for the town of Banff. And he was treated for very severe arm injuries, and also he had reconstructive surgery on the biceps and triceps areas. Actually, they were initially concerned that he was going to lose his arm as a result of the attack. But basically they were happy to find out that there was a very important artery that was actually intact and maintaining circulation in the lower part of the arm. So he was able to keep it. But the situation here was that he was out riding and he was actually chased apparently for quite a distance by what turned out to be about a 140-pound black bear. And actually, according to the things that I've read, that is actually much lighter than a normal healthy bear. So they're thinking there may have been obviously something wrong with this particular bear, besides the fact that he attacked the cyclist, that may have been just a symptom of maybe something else wrong with the bear. They noted, of course, in one of the articles I read, that the cyclist was wearing headphones at the time he was attacked. And they also noted that near the area where he was attacked, there was a sign warning that there were bears in the area. But it's pretty uncommon for bears to attack cyclists. And so I think that it was reasonable for him to be out there and mountain biking on those trails. Now, apparently last June, a woman was killed by a grizzly while she and some friends were out jogging on a hiking trail nearby. So this time of year, obviously, bears are coming out of hibernation. So if you live in an area where there are bears and, you know, one of the smart things is, one of the things that I do when I'm mountain biking in the local mountains, when I'm by myself, where I know that there are bears and also mountain lions and cougars, I have a bear bell that I attach to the handlebars of my mountain bike, and it makes a heck of a noise. And it really sort of takes away from the serenity of being out in the mountains. But at the same time, it also lets those animals know that somebody's coming. So maybe there's a mother bear and her cubs, and she's going to be very protective of those cubs if you get too close. Well, if she hears you coming, she's going to have a chance to shepherd her cubs away and make sure that you're nowhere near them. And so you run less of a risk of attack. So think about what you need to do to keep yourself safe in the area that you ride, whether it's elephants or bears or mountain lions. Let's remember that we really are visitors in these forests, and this is where these animals live. And so let's do whatever it is that we can to make sure that we don't encroach on their habitat and where they live, and also to keep ourselves safe while we're out there. And of course, another tip besides bringing the bear bells with you is don't ride alone. And certainly don't ride early in the morning and late in the afternoon, because that's when the animals are out and doing their thing. But not riding alone is also really smart, because in this case, the gentleman that was attacked, the only way that he was found was because his friends found his bike and a broken helmet, and they could actually hear him calling for help. But had he been out there by himself, there's a very good chance that, you know, he may have bled to death. So be careful out there, and the bottom line is, do those things that you need to do to keep yourself and the animals safe. And that's going to do it for the news for tonight. Well, we've talked a lot on the Fredcast about various gadgets and gizmos that I'm into when I ride. And one of the greatest gadgets that I've always liked since I became a cyclist was a good cycle computer. And I came across a brand of cycle computers that I hadn't actually tried before. And that is the brand VDO. Now, if you're not familiar with VDO, and perhaps the reason why I was so attracted to these cycle computers, VDO is very, very well known for being the instrumentation company that provides instruments in cars from Mercedes and BMW and other European manufacturers. So when you get into a BMW and you get behind the wheel and you're looking at the speedometer or the tachometer, when you look down at the bottom, you're going to see the letters VDO, and that's the company that makes those instruments in those cars. So when I saw that VDO had come out with a brand of cycle computers, I was really excited to give them a try. And so I went out and I've installed a new VDO cycle computer on my bike, and I've been trying it over the last couple of weeks, and I have to tell you that I really like it. So let me tell you about the one that I am working with right now and tell you why I like it and why I think it's a really, really nice unit. Now, the model that I'm looking at is the VDO model MC1.0+. And they offer several different models, and I've put links in the show notes to the VDO cycle computer website, as well as to the website for the North American distributor for VDO, where you can go on and you can find out which retailer in your area or which mail order company would be able to sell these to you. Now, what I was attracted to about this model is the fact that beyond the regular cycle computer functions, it also includes an altimeter. And like some of the altimeters that we've talked about on the Fredcast before, this is a barometric altimeter. So what that means is that it compares the air pressure And that's how it knows what altitude you're at. Now, when you first install the Cycle Computer, and let me tell you about the installation on this just for a moment before I talk about its features. I've installed a number of different computers on a number of different bikes. This one, of course, is a wireless computer, which means that all you need to do is attach the magnet to the spokes on your front wheel and then attach a wireless sensor to your front fork. Now, on my bike, I have the Mavic Kazerium wheels, and those have sort of flat spokes. They're not your standard round spoke shape. And one of the things that I found with the Kazeriums and also with some other wheels that I've owned before that have oddly shaped spokes is that the magnets that come with these Cycle Computers don't always fit around the spokes. And so you have to do a little bit of magic in order to get the magnet to sit on the spokes and to stay in one place. The nice thing about the one that came with the VDO Cycle Computer was that it easily accommodated the oddly shaped spokes on my Kazerium wheels. And that was the first thing that I noticed, and that made it really, really easy to get started with it. Obviously, then, of course, you take the wireless sensor that senses the magnet, you place it on your front fork, and you do that just with a couple of zip ties, and that's pretty standard. But then there was the handlebar mount, and this one was pretty unique. Two things about it that I found really unique about it. The first thing is the fact that instead of using a zip tie to attach it to your handlebars, this one actually has a really neat sort of screw mechanism where you have a flat tab that inserts into a slot, and that tab is threaded. And then the slot has a screw, and as you turn that with a screwdriver, the threaded tab gets pulled in and tightened. And I really liked that because it gave a very firm grip around the handlebars, and I really felt that it was going to be more durable than your standard zip ties that a lot of other Cycle Computers use. So that was the first thing that I noticed about it. The second thing was the way that the computer actually attaches to that handlebar mount. Now, normally, you know, your computer just sort of slides in, and then maybe there's a tab that locks and maybe clicks, and that's how you know that it's in there. And I've always been a little bit wary about those because I've always felt that if you don't get it in there just right, and actually this has happened to people that I've known before, they thought that their Cycle Computer was seated and that the tab had locked into place, and it actually hadn't. And as they went around a turn, they went one way and their Cycle Computer went the other. And, you know, they were just lucky that it didn't end up under the wheels of a car or something like that. So in this case, VDO has a really nice twisting mechanism. And there's a couple of tabs on the base of the Cycle Computer that go into a slot on the mount. And you then push it down and turn the computer 90 degrees. And then those tabs lock into the base of the mount, and it's extremely firm and it clicks and you know that it's locked. And so I really liked that. But then I started to use it. The first thing you have to do is you have to set it up so that it knows what your home altitude is. Now, there's a lot of different ways that you can find out your home altitude. The first, of course, is if maybe you have a GPS and it gives you altitude, but usually GPS altitude isn't very accurate. So another way is maybe you know a website online that you can go to where there's a topographical map and you can put in the coordinates for where your house is and it'll show you what the altitude is. I have to tell you, I don't think that that's the best way of going either. Really, the best thing that you can do is go to your local airport. And every airport has posted what the elevation of that airport is. And they also have a radio broadcast. So remember, we talked a few weeks ago about listening to race radio when you go out to these races and you can hear what's going on because maybe you have a radio scanner. Well, if you have a radio scanner, you can listen to what they call the ATIS broadcast or the Automated Terminal Information System that every airport all around the world broadcasts. And it'll give you what the local altimeter setting is, and it will tell you what the elevation of the airport is. So first thing you need to do is input the elevation of wherever it is that you're setting up your computer. Once you've done that, and once you've told it your wheel size, as you do with every computer, you're ready to go out and go for a ride. So let's talk a little bit about what's in the VDO Cycle Computer and what makes it special and why I really would recommend it to you. First of all, the screen is big, and there are multiple lines of text on the screen. Always showing on the screen will be your current speed, as well as your current altitude. It'll also show you the percent grade. So as you're going up a hill, maybe it'll say 3, 4, 5, or as it said this weekend as I was doing a century, 12%. It also shows the temperature. And again, all of these are available to you in either English or metric. So again, in the temperature, you could get it in Fahrenheit or Celsius. And then the bottom portion of the screen is where you can display different text depending on what you want to see. And of course, you'll find everything there from average speed to maximum speed to the amount of time that you've been riding. And of course, it does have an auto start and stop, which I like because a lot of cycle computers don't have that sometimes, especially on the lower end. And maybe you forget to start it when you go out on your ride. So I really like the auto start and stop. That's really nice. But a couple of things that this has that other cycle computers don't. Obviously, it's got altitude, so it will be able to tell you what was your maximum altitude on a given ride. So this weekend, the ride I did, I think it gave me a maximum altitude of about 1,800 or 1,900 feet. It will also tell you how much climbing that you've done over the entire ride. It'll also tell you what your maximum grade was. So as I told you earlier, I ended up having a climb that was about 12% at one point, and it showed that. It will also show you, and this is something that I really liked about it for doing an organized ride. You know that when you're doing an organized ride, they hand you a route sheet. And that route sheet says, turn right, go for 0.5 miles, and then turn left, and then go a certain number of miles, and then turn right, and so on. Well, sometimes it gets a little bit hard to keep track of where you are and where you turned and where you need to turn soon. And this has a feature that's called Navigator. And Navigator is really nice because you start off your ride and it's at zero. And so now you go down that half of a mile and you need to turn right. Now you reset the Navigator. And maybe you need, the route sheet says that you need to go 1.1 more miles before you make a left. Well, you look down at the Navigator and when it says, when it's getting close to 1.1, you know it's time for that you need to start looking for that next street or that next highway that you need to be turning on. And so every turn you make, you reset the Navigator. And I did that this weekend on the Century that I did. And it was really a great tool. And I really enjoyed having that on the cycle computer as I used it. A couple of other things that I also liked about the Video cycle computer. The nice thing is that you can program it for different wheel sizes. So you could use this on your road bike, and then you could transfer it to your mountain bike, and then you just tell it you're using wheel size 1 or wheel size 2, and then it's able to keep track of odometers for both wheel size number 1, so you know how many road miles you put in, and then for wheel size number 2, so you know how many mountain miles you put in, and then there's a total odometer, which combines the two so that you know, for instance, if you were on your mountain bike 3 days this week and on your road bike 2 days this week, you know how much you did on each, but then at the end of the week, you also know how much you did total riding, and that's really, really nice. It also has the ability to scroll through all of its functions hands-free, so it can just be constantly changing all of the functions for you as you're riding. Now, of course, it'll continue to show you your speed and your elevation, but all of the other functions will continue to scroll automatically for you. And I think that's a really nice feature. And I personally haven't seen that on any of the other cycle computers I've used. Finally, another thing that I really liked about the computer was in the manual. The manual has this great fold-out setup guide, which has no words. It's just pictures, just pictographs. And it's really, really easy to follow. And I'm not usually one to read manuals. I usually just want to get this thing, pull it out of the box, and start using it. And not having to read anything and just go through this really easy setup was really, really nice. Now, I do have to say about the manual, one thing I didn't like is that, and you've seen this before, a lot of times when you buy a product that is manufactured overseas, wherever it comes from, sometimes the manual has not the best translations. And unfortunately, some of the translations in the manual are a little funky. Overall, easy to understand for the most part, but there's a couple of things in there that may make you chuckle or a couple of errors. But for the most part, it's a pretty good manual when it comes to a cycle computer. Overall, I really liked it. It is something that I definitely want to keep on my handlebars. I found it to be very, very accurate as I compared it against another computer I was using just for comparison, and also as I compared it against other people that I was riding with. It was accurate on the elevation. It was accurate according to the route sheet that I was using for the ride. And I just really found it to be an excellent tool, very easy to use, very easy to understand, and I would recommend it to you. I think that it's definitely a really nice product, and it lives up to the VDO reputation. Suggested retail for the VDO MC 1.0 Plus is right around 160 US from everything that I've been able to find online. But I can tell you that there are plenty of retailers and online websites where you should be able to find it for quite a bit less. And that's the VDO MC 1.0 Plus. It's a product I use. And in this case, it's definitely a product that I recommend. And one more product I wanted to talk to you about tonight, and this is one that I found on Saturday. On Saturday, I did Cruise in the Conejo, which is a century that takes place up in Thousand Oaks, California. Pretty fun ride. It was a beautiful day, and it's always an interesting ride because it's about 4,500 feet of climbing in the first about 35 or 40 miles. And as I think I told you once before, one of the really neat things about it is that it's a fundraiser for the local Boy Scout troop. And the Boy Scouts really appreciate the fact that we're all out there and bringing them money so that they can go to summer camp and whale watching and a lot of the activities that they do throughout the years. And when you get to each rest stop where the moms and dads of the Boy Scouts are helping serve the food, the Boy Scouts are out there and they hold your bike for you as you are getting your food or going to the restroom or doing whatever it is you're doing at the rest stop. And I always thought that was really neat. And the boys are always very, very careful with those bikes because I think they've been well lectured on how expensive some of our bikes can be. But before I started the race, I was just sort of walking around the expo area, and I remembered seeing a t-shirt that I thought was really, really neat. And I thought about it the whole 100 miles. And when I got back, I went to my car and got out a credit card, and I went right to the t-shirt booth, and I said, "Listen, I've been thinking about this shirt for 100 miles. I hope you still have some, and I hope you have one in my size." And they did, and I thought it was really neat, and I bought it. And I just wanted to tell you about it because I thought it was a cool shirt. And it's from a company called Sprocket Gear, and I've put a link in the show notes to their website. And it's their Eat, Sleep, Ride t-shirt. And so it looks like a panel of three road signs that you might see, you know, sort of the gas, food, lodging signs that you see along the highway. So the first one says Eat, and it's a picture of some utensils as if you were going to go eat somewhere. And then the next one says sleep. And that one looks like the usual icon that you would see for a hotel. So, you know, it's a bed with a little guy sleeping in it. And then the third one is, it says ride, and it's a guy riding a bike. And it just, it's me. Although my daughter said that between eat and sleep, it should say podcast, because I eat and then I podcast, then I go to sleep. So I thought that was kind of funny. But anyway, I thought it was a really neat shirt, and I wanted to put a link in the show notes because they were such nice people and it was such a cool shirt, which I paid for. So again, it's not a paid endorsement here. It's just something that I thought was cool and something that I thought that you all might be interested in, because as Freds, I have a feeling that you're definitely in the eat, sleep, ride category like I am. So go ahead and check it out. That's at sprocketgear.net. Finally, a new and notable on the net tonight, and this is something that I found in one of the most recent issues of Bicycle Retailer. And this is you remember we talked a few weeks ago about web mashups, where you take two different applications on the internet, put them together, and they become a third, even more useful application. And here, this one's the Bicycle Trip Planner, and you can find this at bicycle.org, and that's bicycle.org. And this is a free online tool that will help you plan safe trips through various cities. Now, right now, it's only available for Portland, Oregon, and Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and the metro areas around there. But they're going to be adding other regions, and their long-term goal is to be able to route between various cities. It's really cool. It's a mashup that uses the Google Maps online tool, And it's something that if you're in Portland or you're in Milwaukee, this is something that you might really be interested in. And what's neat is they say that future versions of it will allow you to modify your routes according to length, traffic volume, and elevation preferences, and that you'll also be able to create routes to and from points of interest. So that, for instance, maybe you want to go between a park and a business or something like that. It's a really, really neat idea. It's something that I've always been looking for on the net, and I hope that they are able to expand it really soon to a lot of areas. And of course, specifically for me, I would like to see it for the Los Angeles area. But again, if you're in Portland or you're in Milwaukee, something that you might be interested in. And that's pretty much going to do it for us tonight. Again, I'm still very, very much behind on both the forum and the emails. I'm going to get to those this week. So no shout outs this week, but want to say thank you to everybody out there for listening, for voting for us on Podcast Alley, which you can still do, and for helping to spread the word among your friends and family and the rest of the people that you ride with. I really, really appreciate it. Again, even though I am behind, that's one of the reasons that the forums are there. That's forums.thefredcast.com, so that when I get behind, there are other Freds out there that you can communicate with who hopefully can answer some of your questions. And I will be catching up this week, both on the forums and on the emails. Of course, go ahead and put your thumbtack into our Frapper map, and I put a link in the show notes to that. Send me an email. I'm going to be catching up on them, so I will be getting to you, and that's thefredcast@gmail.com. You can also send voicemails, and that's at area code 206-203-FRED. And of course, you can visit the website at www.thefredcast.com. Now, before we get to tonight's PodSafe cycling music, just a quick mention. If you are listening to this at a independent bicycle dealer, or perhaps if you are close with your local independent bicycle dealer, I have an offer that I am interested in making. And that's this. I'm looking to start making podcasts for independent bicycle dealers, because I think that this is a really good medium that people can use to not only advertise their businesses, but also to let people know about maybe perhaps some local trails that are nearby, or some club rides, or even give people a little bit of cycling news. Now, this is going to be separate from the Fredcast. This is going to be where each individual dealer can have their own podcast, which they would put on their own websites. And in order for me to get started doing that, I'm offering to the first two bike shops, the first two that contact me, I'm willing to offer their first podcast free. So if, again, you're a bike dealer or you know a bike dealer and this sounds like something you might be interested in, send me an email to thefredcast@gmail.com. The very first two who send me emails, I'm going to be giving you your first podcast for free. And then after that, you can consider whether or not you want to engage my services for doing that. So quick offer that we're making out there to the bike shops. And if you're interested, please contact me at the email, thefredcast@gmail.com. Okay, enough about that. It's time for our PodSafe cycling music tonight. It comes to us, as always, from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Tonight's music is called Rocket Science, and it's from a band called Brain Bucket. And I've put a link to their Podshow site as well as to their own website at brain-bucket.com. I really hope you've enjoyed the show. I hope you enjoy the music. But most of all, I hope you enjoy the ride. Chickens, but I know they can't fly.
didn't raise no dummies, and I can tell you lying. With a huddle.